9:40 a.m. Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition,
sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. President Biden signed an executive order today aimed at more background checks for gun sales.
The president traveled to Monterey Park, where 11 people were killed and 9 others were hurt in January.
We remember and mourn today, but I'm here with you today to act.
Mr. Biden announced he'd signed an executive order implementing changes passed by Congress last year. The move could result in some small-time traders who turn a profit being required to perform background checks even if they don't sell firearms for a living. Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, Washington.
People are revving up those snowblowers now as a nor'easter blows through the Northeast. It's already knocked out power to tens of thousands in New England.
I think it's scary. I ran out of power about 9:30 this morning, so I'm living with my fireplace.
New York and New Jersey have declared states of emergency. Out west in California, more extreme weather. WCBS meteorologist Craig Allen is tracking it.
Dangerous avalanche conditions have developed across the eastern High Sierra, and this is because of the intense snowfall and the rain and snow at lower elevations, very strong winds that will be gusting between 50 and 80 miles per hour.
Many have already been forced from their homes in Monterey County, where a levee broke, causing dangerous floods. The Pentagon's condemning Russia now for the aggressive takedown of a U.S. drone over the Black Sea. Spokesman Brigadier General Pat Ryder.
Several times before the collision, the Su-27s dumped fuel on and flew in front of the MQ-9 in a reckless and unprofessional manner.
The State Department calls it a brazen violation of international law. The state of Ohio is taking Norfolk Southern to court.
Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost announced the lawsuit.
This derailment was entirely avoidable. I'm concerned that Norfolk and Southern may be putting profits for their own company above the health and safety of the cities and communities that they operate in.
He says its aim is to ensure the company pays for the cleanup and damage caused by the February 3rd derailment. The attorney general says the extent of the damage is still not fully known. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
A woman in Rhode Island has been sentenced to 6 years in federal prison for pretending to be a sick Marine veteran. Prosecutors say Sarah Jane Cavanaugh was a social worker at a veterans hospital and stole patient information to collect about $300,000 in benefits and donations. She told people she'd served in Iraq and Afghanistan and got cancer from exposure to burn pits and from inhaling smoke from explosion during those tours. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
The Shaw 101 FM. Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinere. Here's what you need to know. If you receive food share benefits, beware of a new scam. The Department of Health Services warning benefit recipients are getting a text telling them to call a number and confirm personal information so their accounts don't get locked. But that information is then used to steal benefits. DHS says you can protect yourself by monitoring your account balances, creating a unique password, and using security features limiting unauthorized access. And remember, texts or emails from the government agency never ask for personal information or offer a prize for responding. For the 7th year in a row, anti-Semitic incidents have increased in Wisconsin. The Jewish Community Relations Council of the Milwaukee Jewish Federation says in a report there were 101 reported anti-Semitic incidents in Wisconsin last year, up 6.3% from 2021. I'm Jane Matinere. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show, and we are now on the air in Waukesha, live weeknights 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
Plenty of people start something great in their 40s and 50s. Getting your retirement savings on track is no different. Go to aceyourretirement.org and in 3 minutes you'll get personalized tips to help boost your retirement savings. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM. Native Roots Radio is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy!
Get up, stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, and they cut again.
Because all the hippies are trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot, and we discuss local and national Native news and events. And as you know, Wendy, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Development Institute in Minneapolis.
Hey, we're going to get with John here in a minute, but first we want to play a quick update from Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. Welcome, Lieutenant Governor.
This is Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and I'm joining Native Roots Radio with an update from the Walz Flanagan administration. Last week, the February forecast showed that Minnesota's economy is strong and stable, thanks to the hard work of working families and small businesses across our state. And the legislature continues to be incredibly productive on legislation that improves the lives of all Minnesotans. Also, the governor and I have the honor of appointing incredibly qualified and driven individuals as commissioners to lead our cabinet agencies. To date, the Minnesota Senate has confirmed 13 of our commissioner appointments. These include Department of Administration Commissioner Alice Roberts Davis, Department of Agriculture Commissioner Tom Peterson, Department of Commerce Commissioner Grace Arnold, Department of Education Commissioner Willie Jett, Office of Higher Education Commissioner and Fond du Lac Tribal Member, Dennis Olson, Department of Human Rights Commissioner, Rebecca Lucero, Department of Labor and Industry Commissioner, Nicole Blissenbach, Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board Commissioner, Ida Rukavina, Minnesota Management and Budget Commissioner, Jim Showalter, the Minnesota IT Department Commissioner, Tarek Tomes, Department of Revenue Commissioner, Paul Marquardt, Department of Transportation Commissioner Nancy Dobenberger, and Department of Veteran Affairs Commissioner Larry Herkey. These are all highly qualified and committed public servants who the governor and I rely on to lead the work of state government. We're grateful to these Minnesota senators for getting these confirmations done so quickly in this term. Last time I talked about two extremely important bills that had just passed the Senate, Restore the Vote and Driver's Licenses for All. The governor has signed both of those bills into law. The celebrations at these bill signings were incredibly moving and powerful, and just a great reminder of all of the work that has been done over decades to make this legislative session possible. People kept the faith, and now we're getting it done. Additionally, the governor has signed several other bills, including providing $5 million in emergency funding to food shelves to help more Minnesotans in need put food on the table. And incidentally, that was a bill that was introduced by Representative Heather Keeler, who's a member of the Native American Caucus. He also has signed a bill tying the budget forecast to inflation to make sure that we can keep up with the costs for Minnesotans. He's authorized the DNR to make changes to improve Minnesota Minnesota State Park and Recreation Area boundaries and properly transfer Minnesota county and state lands. And the governor has also signed a bill unlocking $315.5 million in federally appropriated funds from the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act to improve our Minnesota roads. And boy, don't we need it right now. And then finally, the governor signed Executive Order 2303, which protects the rights of LGBTQ plus Minnesotans to seek and receive gender affirming care. And with this executive order, we are saying to our trans loved ones, to our friends, to our neighbors and fellow Minnesotans that you belong here. You are safe here. We want you to live the fullest, truest, happiest version of your life and to be yourself here in our community. We were joined by medical professionals and elected officials, the Queer Caucus, community members who are all saying the same thing. Because let's be clear, this is life-affirming and life-saving healthcare. When our children tell us who they are, it's our job as grown-ups to listen and to believe them. And when our friends and neighbors tell us that this is critical care that will help them feel safer and happier and more themselves, it's our job to listen and to believe them. And when our medical professionals tell us this care will help improve and save lives of their patients, it is our job to listen and to believe them. In Minnesota, our trans, non-binary, two-spirit, gender-expansive relatives are seen and heard and valued and protected and loved for who they are. That is what it means to be a good neighbor, and I think that's what it means to be a Minnesotan. While there are bullies across this country who may be attacking the community, here in Minnesota, we are going to stand up for our trans relatives. There's more work that we can do to protect and support trans youth and adults, but I look forward to continuing that work in partnership with fierce advocates like Representative Lee Finke and with the community. So we continue to work hard. I'm going to keep sending you updates. I appreciate this opportunity to share with you what's happened down at the Capitol. Chimigwich. Pina Gigi, and back to you.
Wow, Wendy, just awesome to hear the Lieutenant Governor.
Always. I'm glad that she's on it all the time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Every other week she's drops in with a nice segment. But hey, we got John Williams, Director of Development for Native American Community Development, on now. And we're really excited to have you on, John. Welcome.
Why, thank you, Robert. I'm honored to be here.
You know, it was funny, the last time you were on, I was listening to the show because, you know, I was critiquing it, and I got to just say this, you were worked with the Valley of the Dolls.
Valley of the Dolls, yeah.
Right, and that blew my mind because a friend of mine was in that I went to high school with, Julie Tavine. I don't know if you remember name.
Julie, we love Julie.
Yeah, Julia, for sure. She was awesome. I went to high school and junior high with her.
You're bringing me back 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. It was great.
Small world. Small world.
It is. Yeah. So I lived in Minneapolis for 16 years. Yeah. 16 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. It was really different back then because wasn't that like towards mid 80s?
Late 80s and the 90s.
Okay. Yeah. The early 80s. Early 80s were kind of a fog to me, if you know what I mean, but I'm recovering. I'm on my way.
It was the late 80s that were foggy for me, so I'm with you.
Right on. Hey, so that's you're stepping in here for Robert Lilligren. Let's get an update of what would you like to talk about?
Well, we have so much going on at NACDI, but I was thinking it was snowing all day here today. I live in Marshall. I don't know if you knew that, Robert. I commute between the cities in Marshall, Minnesota. So I'm in southwestern Minnesota. But I was thinking that spring is like 10 days away.
Not really. Yeah, slide.
We're on our third winter.
The hope of spring is in a week. I don't know. Do you know about our urban farm, Robert?
No, let's hear about it because I hear a little bit about it, but that'd be great
So many people know that we have a farmer's market. We've been doing that for 9 years. And everybody loves it. The community comes out. We have vendors. We've got educational tables. It's just a lot of fun from June until October every year. But in the past 3 years, Hennepin County Railroad Authority has leased three plots of land in East Phillips neighborhood on 29th Street on the Greenway between Bloomington and 18th Avenue. So we have three plots of land that we got for a lease that is like $1 a year.
Wow.
And our goal with those three plots of land is it's our food sovereignty work, where we want to treat the land with no pesticides and honor our traditional ways of growing. The three different plots will be three different types of gardens. So we've started with a traditional farming garden or backyard garden, and we have 22 raised beds. And a lot of this infrastructure, Robert, was paid for by Midtown Community Works. They really wanted to see us, and the East Phillips neighborhood is really supportive. The Epic group is really supportive of this work.
Yeah, let's talk more about that in the next segment. You got time for, we got to take a quick break here, but we want to talk more about that, and we want some seeds over here in St. Paul. Oh, wow. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
Hoorah.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why Native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Senior Linkage Line is a free, statewide service of the Minnesota Board on Aging, helping older Minnesotans and caregivers find answers and connect to services and supports. Questions about Medicare, transportation, looking to move to senior housing, overwhelmed with prescription drug plans? Call the Senior Linkage Line at 800-333-2433 or visit trellisconnects.org, where we help people optimize well-being as they age. That's trellisconnects.org.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit MN350.org.
When we heal from our traumas,
when we face our fears,
let go of our addictions,
when we relearn our values,
when we live our teachings,
respecting our elders,
cherishing and honoring our children,
when we honor and take care of our spirit,
there will be no room left for sexual violence.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Yes, they are. Hey, Wendy, you know, we talk about politics all the time, mm-hmm. and one of the most important things that we do talk about, not that we're important, but we do talk about important things, is that it's really things happen in the local, you know, your local politicians, you know, of course we want to vote in the presidential,
of course.
That, but you know, grassroots and things that happen are local.
Yes,
politicians.
Our local politics are very, very important, and it's important for everyone to get involved.
Well, with that in mind, we have a guest here, Isaac Russell, who's running for Ward 3 here in St. Paul. Mm-hmm. And that's
City
our
council.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Wendy. And, so it's important for us to amplify these progressive voices and talk about issues and who people are. And so, Isaac, we're really happy to have you on, and welcome to Native Roots Radio.
No, it's my honor. Thank you for having me on. You know, I'm familiar with Native Roots, and you know, I've heard your names about because I've you know, been an active in politics for some years. So, no, it's my pleasure to join you today.
Appreciate that. We always ask too, where people hear of us too, because we run out of the run around, and Wendy's kind of a celebrity and people are always asking about her. And it's like, wow, what about me? But hey, so we have Chris Tolbert, who's not running for re-election, who's been a friend of ours and
he's policy. Become a friend of ours. We got involved with politics we consider Chris Tolbert our friend.
Yeah. And with policy and friendship too. And he's been to our home studio here and held the dog on the lap. And that was a big thing before COVID.
We have pictures, yes. Yeah.
So hopefully someday, Isaac, if things work out, you can come on over and do that too, seeing that we're neighbors. But let's talk about your candidacy. What are we running on, and what's your experience?
No, first of all, again, thank you. But I would look forward to holding the dog on the lap. And I just got a text from my mom, and my mom also has listened to both of you in the past. Campaigns are really about making sure you represent people, right? The priorities of any individual who hopes to represent anyone, it should be the priorities of the people. The conversations that they're having with people, what is important to them. So, that's an essential point to, our representative system. So in terms of, experience, for me, it's the personal experience and then also professional experience, but the two are very much linked. My personal experience, I was born in St. Paul, but I had a lot of housing instability. I lived in 35 different places by the time I was 15, unfortunately, including a homeless shelter on Wabasha across the street from where I work. So this was my experience living on social benefit programs. I was on Section 8. I was on MFIP. I was on, SNAP or welfare back when, food stamps back when it was the funny money, when everyone knew that's what you were using when you were at the store. And the embarrassment that came with that. I've eaten at the Dorothy Day. I have this set of experiences. But what helped bring me out of that, what helped give me opportunities, was support of the community. It was progressive legislation that had been passed before I was ever born, right? Mm-hmm. I went to college on Pell Grants. It was that Section 8 voucher that allowed me to move into affordable housing. It was having experience in a community in which individuals said, you know what, your future matters. So despite the fact, for instance, for a period of time, I lived with my grandparents, and they're on fixed income. But they said, we're going to vote for this levy increase because we think it's the right thing to do. I'm going to football games, and there's my friend's parents serving meals. I see roads being repaired. I have the neighbors saying, hey, behave yourself when you're out there, because I'm going to go tell your grandparents. I'm going to go tell your mom, which of course there was nothing to report.
I'm sure of it.
But, all of that got me very much interested in politics and public policy, and how do we provide the supports necessary for opportunities for youth, opportunities for families. So, I got my education in political science and history, and I did it going to get my AA there while working on a shipping dock, went out to River Falls, got a double major in political science and history there, was working, doing an industrial flooring job, and just volunteered for a campaign because I still wanted to do public service. So I served in the Minnesota Senate for 9 years.
Wow.
As a legislative assistant, including some time working for the assistant minority leader and then the minority leader of the Senate Democrats. Went back and got my master's in public policy from the Humphrey, became the first person, on my father's side to have an advanced degree, and the first person to graduate from a 4-year college with a degree. And since then, actually, I have moved on to the Center for Economic Inclusion, where I work as their director of public policy. So how this sort of legislation to create an inclusive economy? What are the systemic solutions to overcome the systemic inequities that we see in our Black community, in our Indigenous community, in our Asian communities, in our Latinx communities? How do we provide these opportunities? So this is really, for me, City Council is an opportunity to marry my personal experience of knowing you have to deliver for families because there's someone that needs that, with my professional experience to say, hey, this is how you do this work. So, I would say that that's why I'm running. And that's also, I would say my qualifications, as it were.
Wow, that's awesome too. And I know our districts change too, which is made it more diversified, which is a good thing. And with your discussion about that, I'm a former high school teacher, and I know policies, schools, housing, these things that I worked at with or saw happening to my students in an inner city school really affected them. What is your, you have a lot of background in that. What can you do and how can you help our local kids?
So, I mean, there's a multitude of things that, you know, a city council member can do. Part of it is just how do you carry yourself in every day? Part of it is advocating for different levels of government, because this is an all hands on deck challenge that we have to make sure that our students are supported and that they have the opportunities to do what I did, you know. And I'm someone that, you know, I bet my story is very similar to the students that you've had.
Yeah. You know,
I was, you know, when I was 15, actually, I was living in a, not in a homeless shelter, but I was living in a roach infested hotel, because the bottom really fell out of my family. I had a 0.7 GPA my freshman year in high school. You know, I was angry, right? Sure. And it was a sort of, it was an anger that wasn't directed at any one thing, but it was the acknowledgement that, you know what, things just kind of suck.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I go up in the lunch line and someone snatches my lunch away because of free lunch paperwork hadn't come through, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I had gotten into some trouble at school, you know, and had been suspended, these sorts of things. But guess what? My mom's at work, right? So I'm at home. She's lucky that I was the type of person who, okay, I'm actually going to be at home. But sometimes that's not the case for a lot of folks. So the supports that we can provide when we go back to, when we go to these schools, what, first of all, how can we support our families?
Right.
What are the things that they need? You know, I've spoken with principals at, you know, our schools, and that's what they're saying. Children are bringing the challenges that they have at home to school, and it's manifesting them in ways that are, they're getting into fights. And then you talk to the child afterwards, and the child is remorseful. They're sad.
Right.
But this is the world they're in. So the supports that we can do are looking for how we can support our families. And that runs the gamut from looking at how do we make sure that they're able to find employment. If they're on social benefit programs, how do we avoid things such as the benefits cliff, which is, you know, whole, you know, sort of policy thing that I am working on as part of my work at the center. Also, how can we fund our schools, including making sure that schools that have a difficult time raising the money that they need from levies, how can we give them the funding that they need, you know, from the city level so that they can provide resources and opportunities, culturally inclusive curriculum that acknowledges the fact that we are diverse and we're becoming more diverse. And so that has to be reflected in the way that we educate not just our students of color, but also their white counterparts.
Right.
You know, I have two white stepsons, and I'm very happy to see when they come home and they tell me something about Martin Luther King that's not just the I Had a Dream speech.
Right.
Mm-hmm. My son is talking to me about the People's Campaign that he had. Like, yeah. Okay, tell me more about that. So, you know, these are the sort of things that we need to do, but then we also need to make sure that we're providing opportunities. One of the things that I would hope to do if I'm lucky enough to represent my neighbors is providing, for instance, an internship pathway pipeline through the city council office. So we can teach our youth, these are the professional skills you need. These are the issues going on in your community. And let's provide you an opportunity. I also would like to use this position as the ability to bring awareness and raise funds for a scholarship for youth in our area. It won't be enough to pay for the skyrocketing costs of school, but something to say that we're invested in your future and we care. So that's the personal, but then also I think the professional things we need to do. And obviously school safety is fundamental to that also.
Right on. You know, and it's interesting when you were talking, and we're going to take a quick break here in about a minute, but when you were talking, you know, I think it reminds me of Wendy and my story. Mm-hmm. I was a late bloomer. I mean, I did, you know, I was a kid of the 60s and a mm-hmm. student in the 70s. And but here we are. And so there's different degrees of speed. And, you know, our kids, you know, we can't compare our kids a lot of times to the suburban kids because they're having to figuring out where they're going to live that night. And, you know, how can we compare those scores? It's such apples and oranges. But, hey, we're going to be right back, and we're here with Isaac Russell. He's running for Ward 3 here in St. Paul for city council. And we'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
I meant to say short break. Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf.
The SHA 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. President Biden spoke to a crowd in Monterey Park, California today after signing executive action on guns.
I'm here on behalf of the American people to mourn with you, to pray with you, to let you know you are loved and not alone.
A shooter killed 11 people there in January. New England's getting the brunt of a strong nor'easter, WBZ's Zach Green.
Power outages, just shy of 69,000 customers. The concentration of this is on the western side of the state where they're seeing the totals over 2 feet of snow. In Roe, 27 inches. Plainfield, 26 inches. 2 feet in Howley.
And the U.S. confirms a jet took down a U.S. drone in the Black Sea. CBS's David Martin says this happens often, but not this aggressively.
This time they were clearly out to harass that drone and probably did not intend to clip the propeller because that was extremely dangerous for the pilot of that Russian jet.
CBS News Brief. I'm Monica Ricks.
The SHA 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. The roadblocks are down in Lac des Flambeaux, at least for now. The town board and the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa have reached a temporary agreement to buy time for a permanent solution. Easements on the roads expired more than a decade ago. The tribe started blocking parts of some town roads on tribal land at the end of January. Wisconsin Assembly lawmakers consider a bill today to stop the state's licensing board from barring so-called conversion therapy. Republicans have already struck down a recent rule that classified efforts to change a person's sexual orientation or gender identity as unprofessional conduct. Governor Evers promises to veto the bill if it passes. In sports, the Bucks beat Sacramento last night 133-124. Milwaukee is at Phoenix tonight. Also tonight, the Badgers open NIT play at home against Bradley. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing. Advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
My Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
But early detection allowed us to take control of the situation together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Hey, Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Sorry to talk over you. That's a nice tagline, too, and I think you came up with that tagline, Wendy, so thank you so much. Hey, we're here with Isaac Russell, who's running for City Council here in Ward 3 in St. Paul, Minnesota. It's really important for us to talk to politicians that are local, mm-hmm. you know, because I think things happen locally. So welcome back. And Isaac, we want you to be able to give out your email, or not your email, but your website and how people can support you. And we want to do that a couple more times before the segment's over.
Absolutely. So thanks for that opportunity. You know, we're having the precinct caucuses are coming up on March 19th, next Sunday, start at 1:00. Ours will be at the Highland High. So one way, you know, to support me would be showing up to precinct caucuses and being selected as a delegate to our ward convention. Ward convention will be on April 30th. I believe that will be at Central. You know, we have all the information, and you can reach out and get that information from us at isaacforcitycouncil.com. Also, you can find us Facebook, Instagram at Isaac for City Council, trying to keep it simple. Then also Twitter at Isaac for Ward 3. So, yeah, that would be an excellent way is showing up at your precinct caucuses and, you know, becoming a delegate and then voting for our campaign for the endorsement at the convention.
Well, that's exciting. We just touched a little bit on housing and in our last segment, but also how diverse St. Paul and even McAllister, Groveland, and Highland here is becoming, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, I think about where I've been in life is that it touches on a lot of different things for a lot of different people, and allows me to form connections with people and find ways forward, right, to overcome, you know, the bridges that oftentimes divide us. You know, our population in Ward 3 is diversifying, right? You know, first, you know, amongst our white population, we are having newer families, younger families that are coming in, and they're having the sort of struggles trying to find homes that are affordable for first time home buyers. You know, that is something that, you know, was a challenge for myself. You know, I didn't buy my first home until well into my 30s. That sort of $250,000 to $300,000 starter home that allows people to purchase a home and generate wealth that can pass on to their children, it's increasingly difficult. We have 27,000 households in this state that can afford a home, but the stock is just not available because the fundamental challenge that we are having in terms of housing opportunities, affordable housing, housing that's affordable, is the lack of actual housing, right? So that's one way that it manifests. We also have a lot of folks, new Americans. So our Oromo, Ethiopian, Somali folks who are moving into the area. I'm lucky enough to live very close on West 7th. My father actually lives in the ward, and he's been here for a long time. But he is also someone who's had some health challenges, and he's on Section 8, and he lives on the Davern Park apartments on St. Paul Avenue. You know, and so I've taken care of him for years. And so the struggles for a lot of folks in that situation is making sure that they have affordable housing, right? We are in this city over 11,000 units short for affordable housing. To subsidize and incentivize the construction of all of that is about $300,000 per unit. We're talking billions of dollars across the metro to build all the affordable units we need. $13.5 billion. You can over double that to get what we need for the state. So the fundamental challenge is housing. We're going to have to look at innovative ways that we can fund housing. We're going to have to work with folks at the federal level and at the state level so that we're able to generate the revenue we need. I currently, through my work, am working with the Minnesota Housing Partnership on an amendment that would dedicate revenue to the construction of affordable housing. It would also help with home ownership purchasing. That's one of the biggest inequities, racial inequities, right, that we see in our communities, you know, especially for Black, you know, it really amplified for our indigenous communities, is the lack of housing that gives them generational wealth. And so the wealth accumulation, all of these things just are not there, you know. And as you know, for me, you know, as someone who, you know, obviously, you know, my father was Black, but my mother was an elder in the Ottawa a Native tribe. And my grandmother hails from a village in Michigan, right? There was nothing there for them to generate wealth. It actually came from what my grandmother was able to do with her husband, who was a white man. So when we take a look at this housing and what was being able to stabilize, generate wealth. My living situation was stabilized because I was living with my grandparents and they had a home.
Right.
So, I mean, this is a foundational problem for us all.
Yeah, it really, really is. And I think talking, you know, being aware of that is half the battle. And I think, especially with the houses going, you know, unbelievably high, you know, it's just, one of the things for our generation was we'd live longer than our parents, and we'd have housing, which, as you said, is our wealth that you can mm-hmm. borrow against. That's not only generational wealth, that's personal wealth, and it's out of the ballpark for our kids and their kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And one of the, you know, one of the biggest issues too that came with a lot of folks is, yeah, having that equity in the home is great. For a lot of folks, they were, you know, they had lost homes and they had that equity stripped out in the financial crisis. Mm-hmm. So even we need to make sure, do what we can, that the rules are just fair kind of across the board. My grandparents lost their home in 2008, you know, because they had rolled their debt. They had done what everyone told them to do. And, you know, all of a sudden now they can't afford that mortgage. We are still just trying to recover from the effects of that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of housing, the fundamental issue again is making sure that we're constructing enough housing, and we're going to have to work with all stakeholders involved. We're going to have to work with developers, federal government, state government. What can the city do? There's also options to address this through our zoning laws. We can legalize different types of units so we can get the sort of multi-use that cities once were, but mm-hmm. intentionally were created one way. And we know why, exclusionary zoning policy. So, you know, the city, for instance, has a very interesting study that was just produced that looks at consolidating some of our residential classifications. But most importantly, it's trying to provide options for new types of housing for folks. So, I mean, this is going to be, again, I keep saying all hands on deck, because that's truly what it is. No one solution is going to solve all of this.
Exactly. You know, I wanted to switch gears real quick. And when I was young, you had to work in public schools. You had to live in St. Paul. If you were a police officer, you had to live in St. Paul and, you know, in the city. And I think what happened was it ended up finding out that it was unconstitutional. So mm-hmm. we have our officers and our teachers that don't live in the city. So it's hard for them to buy in psychologically, I think, to what's going on. 99% of the police are good. And how do we vet out the bad? And also, how do we support our neighborhoods with crime? And where are you at with that, Isaac?
So, you know, this is a fundamental thing that affects us all, but affects us all differently. And so I think we have to acknowledge the struggles that are in one area necessarily aren't the struggles in another area. So how can we be supportive of the different initiatives that we need to provide what I like to call truly comprehensive public safety? So that comprehensive public safety should really take two forms. The first form is really, how do we keep people safe in real time? This includes, how do we keep our schools safe in real time? Part of it, obviously, is going to be, okay, we need the presence of officers, but how do we embed them in communities and give them ways, incentivize them to form relationships that's necessary for trust? In areas in which there's high trust between law enforcement and the community, they are much more effective at their job. But we need to acknowledge that there are certain communities in which that's just not true. And so what are the ways we can be supportive, right? Highland, McAllister, Groveland, West 7th area that we have, we're lucky to, on average, have a higher level of trust and have a better relationship with law enforcement. But what do we need to do to support other areas so they can get to where we're at? Because being safe and secure for those folks, matters just as much for us. And if they're not, then we're not. So part of that is maybe is looking at community models for policing. But then also there's this other aspect, and that aspect is investing in people, and investing in people in terms of obviously giving them resources so that they're able to make ends meet, but providing them opportunities so that they can get the education that they need, so that they can have the constructive activities that allows them to grow, so that they can form relationships not only with law enforcement, but with their neighbors, so that that community sense gets brought out. Also, what's the sort of cultural sensitivity, the cultural training, the cultural knowledge needed by law enforcement to allow them to effectively form relationships and move throughout these communities? And part of that's going to be working with leaders. I think also one of the things that we need to look at too, in terms of public safety, is how do we provide opportunities specifically for male youth, right? Mm-hmm. We have seen COVID exacerbate some of the challenges already in this community. So I think what we need to do is we need to meet youth and where they're at, provide them investments, provide them mentorship. Do not take a strictly punitive model that seeks to punish them while providing them no opportunities, because you're not acknowledging the struggles that they have. So really, that's how I approach it. It's yes, we need to stay safe in real time, but the biggest thing is there's an opportunity to invest in our youth.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. Hey, we got like less than a minute left here. I want to give you the floor, but I also want to say, Isaac, for citycouncil.com and on Instagram, Isaac for City Council on Facebook and Instagram. So you got a minute, less than a minute. Just thank you so much for coming on. And I'm going to give you the floor here in the last 30 seconds.
No, the thanks is all on my end. Thank you so much. It's great to speak with you here. And, you know, what I want to say is I want to represent people the way they deserve to be represented. And I understand you got to talk to all folks involved. I understand you have to do the difficult thing when it's hard to do it. I'm willing to do that. But most importantly, for me to be effective, I need to hear what's important to everyone else. So please contact me, get a hold of me, tell me what's important to you. Thank you so much for allowing me on.
Wow. Thank you so much. You're listening.
Thank you, Isaac. I'll be being in touch with you.
Wendy will be calling you. Hey, thank you so much. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be back in after this short break.
Stay with us. Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Boost your immunity and help protect your community. COVID-19 is still here, but it's not too late to get your booster. Staying up to date with vaccines can help build protection that has decreased since your last shot and provide better protection against newer variants. Boosters are an important part of protecting yourself from getting seriously ill from COVID-19. To learn more and schedule your appointment, visit ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine. ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
For years, my father sexually abused me. For years, I abused alcohol and drugs to stop the hurt and rage. For years, I was afraid I would become a perpetrator just like him. I'm sober now. I've received help to recover from sexual abuse. I rely on our pipe, our ceremonies, and our culture. For the rest of my life, I'll be learning how to live with my past, because overcoming the abuse of my childhood has made me the strong man that I am today. As men in our Indian communities, we must hold each other accountable and overcome our own past of sexual abuse so that we can break this cycle.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl! Okay, Wendy, the pressure's on. We've had a great show here, and we're talking about our sacred animals, which I like to say family, and they are our relatives, and me as a Native person, and a lot of people out there like yourself really respect that, that they are family and they are beings. So you've been on the show for, you know, 7 years, and we've been learning so much about our relatives. So again, thank you for coming on and sharing your experience, strength, and hope.
Thank you, Robert. My name is Hanaji Hihani, and I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajinga, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level, and it's always my pleasure to do so. Yeah, so today I wanted to kind of mix it up, you know, have a fun day, a lot of light stuff. You know, we talk about our sacred animals, which a lot of people would say, like, if we talk about like wolves and bears and turtles and eagles and elk and deer and all of those animals, you think of like of a more like a Native American type of, you know, feeling. But yeah, we talk about all our animals. We talk about elephants and every, you know, elephants and frogs.
Our dogs.
All kinds of things.
Lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my.
I know. So I have this website, and it's 300 amazing facts about animals. And we started from the bottom. We started from 300, and we're working our way up to number one. And I think we left off at 246 the last time. So these are just fun facts about animals.
Quiz me.
It's really fun. Female eagles are 25% larger than the males.
Wow.
I think I talked about that.
I don't know,
yeah,
but we get new listeners all the time, so pretend you didn't.
Yeah, I know. Dog nose prints are as unique as human fingerprints and can be used to identify them.
Nose prints?
Yeah, they're nose prints.
Okay.
Yeah, they all have right. Nose prints, babe.
So you put a little ink on their nose and then rub it in a piece of paper and wow, okay.
Yes, you could. I mean, they have paw prints too. I wonder, maybe it's smooth on there and the paw prints they don't have.
We could do a whole show on that. So that's write that one down.
I don't know if I'm saying this right, but it's ichthyophobia is a fear of fish.
Oh.
I know somebody who has a fear of fish.
I can see how they're pretty prehistoric looking,
yeah,
when you
and they're
look at them.
Kind of slimy too.
And wiggly.
Allurophobia. I don't know if I'm saying that right either. It's a fear of cats.
Oh.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who don't like, well, you know what? I think people like who don't like cats or
pretend
maybe
they're allergic.
Yes, they do. They pretend they're allergic.
Some are. Don't get us wrong or sue Wendy, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get sued. I just lost my space here. Oh, here we go. You know how when you touch the bottom of your phone, it like goes all the way up to the top?
We've had family members that have said they're allergic to dogs and to cats, and then years later they have them, and you kind of go, I think they were pulling your leg because they wanted more attention, and they know, I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like,
exactly.
Come on.
You know what a baby goat is called, right?
A goatee? A goatee? No, that's
a baby goat.
Oh, okay.
It's called a kid.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was called a baby goat, but yeah, Billy the Kid.
A female goat is called a doe or a nanny.
Doe, a deer.
A nanny goat, right? You have heard somebody say a nanny goat?
Nope.
That's a female goat. A male goat is called a buck or a billy.
Yeah.
Billy goat. Billy goat and a nanny goat. That's a male and a female goat.
Yeah.
Listen to this one. I really like this one. I think I've mentioned this one on the radio before.
But we have new listeners, so...
Yeah.
cows from different areas have different moo accents.
Kind of like your New York accent and my Minnesota accent. Right?
I know. There are over 2,700 types of snakes in the world, and they live in deserts, forests, oceans, streams, and lakes.
Well, like, let's back up to that one again. So would you moo, like, in from New York, you would moo like...
Moo.
No, you'd go, forget about moo. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
The United States has the highest dog population in the world. France has the second highest. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, because right. we have so many animals in shelters right now. So I will say this.
Yes.
Please adopt. Do not shop.
Exactly.
We have the highest dog population in the world. That's crazy. I don't know. They're talking a lot about goats here.
This is the goat section.
I know. I don't know if I want to read this one, but goats were the first animals to be used for milk by okay. humans.
Ick. All right.
I know. Isn't that gross? I don't know. I don't drink cow's milk either, so I think that's for cow
I drink
babies.
Oats, oat milk, oat which milk. Is made from baby oats.
There are estimated to be 400 million dogs in the world. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I know. That's and according to records, there are 50 million monkeys in the world. I always wanted a monkey when I was a kid.
I know.
A now chimpanzee.
It's, now it's like, forget it. But yeah, back then in the 60s, there was
that.
A lot of that going on.
Yeah. Those poor animals.
I know. They're pissed and they're throwing poop at people.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Mad.
The oldest recorded elephant lived for 82 years.
Wow.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Wow.
You
well,
know?
You figure they get somebody maybe 20, 30 years old captures this elephant, and the elephant outlives them, like by a lot of years.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy to think about that?
Right. Well, people get these birds that last, you know, they live 70 years too. So they, you know. Again, and these and turtles too that last
long this, time.
Yeah,
mine always died with a soft shell.
A unicorn.
That's not a real thing.
Well, it says here a herd of unicorns is called a blessing. I know they're not a real thing, but here it says number 232. A herd of unicorns is called a blessing.
With fairy dust?
I don't know. I guess so. Really? That's why I asked you what a unicorn was, because I thought maybe I was thinking of something different. I don't know.
I can't stop laughing. Okay, so this is the fiction part of our show.
The color red.
Unicorn.
Doesn't really make bulls angry. They are colorblind.
I know what makes them angry is a damn knife in their back.
Exactly. And being in an arena with a stupid man waving a cloth in front of their face. Okay,
with
listen
super
to
tight pants.
Exactly. Well, you know what? They've been banning bullfighting around the world. It's being banned. It will be, hopefully, in our lifetime, maybe a thing of the past.
All I have to say is thank goodness for Gen Z. They don't stand for that.
I know.
That's
go
so
Gen
cool.
Zs. It costs approximately $10,000 to train a federally certified search and rescue dog. And you know what? These dogs are amazing. They
right.
go into disaster zones and help and rescue people.
Yeah. I know. It was so sad during 9/11.
Yes.
They had to find people just so the dogs wouldn't get depressed. You've talked about that.
Yeah, the dogs were going and they couldn't. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Do I have time for one more?
Hopefully a happy one.
The Irish deer is the largest deer to have ever existed. It went into extinction approximately 7,700 years ago.
That's a long time.
Irish deer.
All right. The McDeer. Hey, thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio. We're still here. We are the seventh generation. Come back tomorrow and take a listen. We'll be back tomorrow.
Save free Leonard Peltier.
Now.
My way. Ah, the Ides of March, the day that Caesar was killed, and it's the final day for you to make a killer deal.
March 15th.
That's right, March 15th is your last day to take advantage of our biggest sale. We're slashing prices on our premium sponsorships up to 50%.
Tie your business message and phone number into our hourly weather forecasts and get results.
But you must hurry.
This spectacular offer ends March 15th. Log on to civicmedia.us/weather now. That's civicmedia.us/weather.
Hey, Wisconsin, the spring election is April 4th. Make sure you're prepared with an ID to vote. If you have a Wisconsin driver's license or state ID, military ID, U.S. passport, VA card, or Wisconsin tribal ID, you're all set. If not, you've got options. For free help getting an ID to vote, call or text Vote Riders at 866-ID-2-VOTE. That's 866-ID, the number 2, V-O-T-E. Call or text today, 866-ID.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.